The Business Buzz Podcast.
The Business Buzz with Mudiwa Mokshastra Gabaza.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Business Buzz for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Voice of Wits FM. That's 88.1, broadcasting live from our studios in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Leo Mob Justice Gabaza and I'll be your host for today. Now, who's to say that the world of business can't be entertaining? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to keep you entertained, educated and intrigued about the world of business. Now, for today, it's it's an interesting one, as our tradition here on the Business Buzz. We are having our brand new heavy for the month of September. The brand new heavy is where we take time to celebrate a young person in South Africa who is excelling and doing their things in their industry. And for today, we are joined, we have the honor of talking to Apiwe Kumsani Mawela, who is a South African brewmaster. She is the first person in the country to earn a national diploma in clear fermented beverages and is also the first black woman in South Africa to found a microbrewery. Make sure you tune in to our interview with her later in the show, where she'll be telling us a little bit about her journey in the industry and her business, Brewster's Craft, which introduces students to the science of beer making through training and actually provides professional breweries with a service through quality beer testing. So that's how the show is looking like. Definitely make sure you keep it locked. Coming up next, we'll be getting into the business wrap with Lebo Pasha, just giving you the week's top trending business and economics news. Remember that you can keep in touch with us. You can find us on online. That's the Voice of Wits, the VAW FM. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. That is VAW FM or Voice of Wits. Our other Facebook page is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAW FM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. You can also search for us on iono.fm. Where our podcasts and links are available, and you can also find our other great content on vis.journalism.co.za/business. Make sure you keep it locked. We are here for the next hour. This is the Business Buzz. On the other side of this, we get into the business wrap.
Business wrap with Lebo Pasha.
It's time for us to get into the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by a financial expert, Lebo Pasha, who is the general manager for Southern Africa at the African Management Institute. Lebo, greetings to you. How's your week and how's this week in business?
Greetings to you, Mudiwa. Greetings to the VAW FM listeners out there. It's a good weekend. I've made it a long weekend, so like most South Africans, I've taken the Friday off, and yeah, I've got an extra long weekend.
And in terms of that, what has happened this, I guess, in the news, you know, that's been catching your attention, as you said, and as you are practicing, it is a long weekend for most people, which means the business week was, you know, much shorter than usual.
Yes, so we had quite an interesting heritage weekend. We've seen a lot of articles come out from the media about not just the Quell, the brand, but from Kwasiza Bantu, the alleged cult in KZN. This is a religious community or what you'd call a mission that started, I think, about 50 years ago, based around agriculture, and people were being taken in over a very long period of time. And some of the stories go back even before the end of apartheid, where we've seen people who are part of Kwasiza Bantu coming out and saying that they actually spied for the apartheid government and were doing work for the security police in times of apartheid. And this has now translated into abuses or human rights abuses that continued after apartheid, where we've heard some shocking stories about people who've basically been not allowed to leave that place, allegations as well of rape and sexual abuse. It's quite alarming when you read some of the stories and testimonials from some of the people who were part of that mission. But we've seen the big grocers, we've seen Macro, Game, Food Lovers Market, Woolies, Bar, who also buy some vegetables and other agricultural produce. from this case at admission in area close to Mapumulo. We've seen all of these large grocers taking some of these products off their shelves. The biggest one that everybody probably knows is Aquel Water.
It really sounds like a very deep story. What I'm trying to understand right now is, what's the actual Aquel link?
So the Aquel link, I think it's a bit foggy at this stage, because nobody's really come out with a very clear description of the connection, but it appears that the Aquel bottling plant is located on the farm that is owned by this alleged cult, or Wasiza Bantu Mission. So the water processing and bottling plant is on the farm as well. It's not clear whether the activities from the broader sort of property have gone into Aquel's bottling plant, and whether you've got people at the plant who are working at this plant that are also part of the mission as well. But we've seen micro game and food lovers cut ties basically with some of these businesses that are linked to Wasiza Bantu. We've seen micro take the bottles of Aquel water off its shelf. So there's definitely a close tie between the bottled water brand, which is allegedly maybe owned by Wasiza Bantu, and that's been taken off the shelves.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. And then moving on, we understand that the South African Reserve Bank is saying that there will be no more interest rate cuts.
Yes, we've seen Mr. Chakanyako draw a very thick line in the sand for the SA government. He's basically told us that the last interest rate cut that we've gotten should be the last interest rate cut. And what he's basically saying to the government is that cutting interest rates to try and stimulate the economy is not going to fix SA's problems. So the way it works is, when you cut interest rates, you hope that you'll discourage people from saving money, because when they put that money in the bank account, they'll continuously earn less interest, and you'll then be encouraging them to spend that money rather. So he's saying this and quantitative easing, which is reduction of interest, would not produce the kind of skills the economy needs. It's not going to deal with our issues around fiscal discipline, so overspending on our budgets, not being efficient, and not in very direct words, probably also issues with corruption, because we've seen the 500 billion rand evaporate, or large parts of it, because of PPE procurement scandals across the country. So he's basically said the government needs to do its job now. He's done what he can, and it's now over to the government.
And speaking of government and the different responses to COVID-19, you know, and some of the issues in the country, even before the pandemic struck, but are still haunting us to this day, load reduction across South Africa?
Yeah, we're learning new terms all the time. Speaking to someone in Zambia who also didn't have electricity and was trying to understand what is load reduction. And simply, load shedding is when you've got issues on the national grid that are being fixed by cutting electricity, and load reduction is at a much smaller area. So you'd cut off a city, or you'd cut off a suburb, part of a city. And that would be load reduction, and that's just balancing the grid in a smaller area. And we've seen Eskom give notices on this Heritage Day weekend of areas across, or parts of Gauteng, Limpopo, Free State, and KZN that have basically been cut off the grid. And these are a lot of areas. So I think we're going to be living with this for quite a while yet. There's a long list of areas that I won't go into, but we've got a lot of cities like Ladysmith, we've got some Duba Duba, so this is the Richards Bay area in KZN, and large swathes of other areas, even in Tshwane as well, in Pretoria, our capital city. So definitely electricity issues are going to be carrying on with us going on into the future. And I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done also at a municipal level to try and fix issues around non-payment for electricity, because this is where a lot of this comes from. And this is Eskom trying to deal with that situation of non-payment for electricity across the country.
So that's been it in terms of this week in the business wrap with Lebo Pasha, just giving us some insight into the week's top news. We are learning new terms, as he said. I had not heard of load reduction, but apparently this is where you're sort of load shedding, but not on a national scale, but, you know, you're reducing, you know, power requirements and all of that in a smaller geographical area. We keep learning. This is the value that we're adding to you guys as our listeners on the business budget. And thank you to Lebo for his dose of wisdom on that. On the other side of this, we continue with our show. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Rep with Lebo Pasha. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the main topic, and because it is, you know, the last week of the month, we get into our brand new heavy. That's where we celebrate a young person in South Africa, 35 years and below, who is doing the things in their industry. And today we are happy to have a brewmaster, you know, someone who is a beer educator, who's going to be talking to us. But before that, you can just remember that you can engage with us on Facebook. We have our FM, that's Voice of Vids, and our other Facebook page is the Vids Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at Vow FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So as we get into it, we are privileged to have our brand new heavy for the month of September is Apiwe Ngusani Mawela, who is a brewmaster, a beer educator, and she is passionate about all things beer. Apiwe, greetings to you.
Hello, Budi. How are you doing?
No, we're doing all right. Thank you so much for joining us today and, you know, being part of our show. I think just as a place for us to begin the conversation, how did you actually get into, you know, beer making, beer, you know, just the whole beer industry? Where does that passion actually come from?
Sorry. the passion for beer, for the brewing industry, actually didn't start from beer as a product. I was never really into beer growing up. My interest was around the sciences. So it was always around, in high school, I enjoyed biology, I enjoyed maths. Not that I was the cleverest in the class, but I kind of understood and liked that. And I, growing up, I knew that I was going to end up within the science field. My parents wanted me to become a doctor, but I was not really much into that line. So how I ended up studying microbiology was I was doing my high school here in Joburg, Queens High. I'm originally from Butterworth in the Eastern Cape. So when I was in high school, my parents allowed me to come up here in Joburg to do my high schooling. I attended an open day at what was then RAU, now UJ. And within their microbiology science stand, they had they were showcasing the study of biotechnology. So they had kind of castle lager, they had yogurt, they had cheese. They had like a whole range of different products that are produced through the biotechnological processes. And for me, that is actually that's the interest was sparked. And because through high school, I mean, Vets for me was always a university that I aspired to get to. So even when I was choosing my subjects, looking at my marks, it was always around wanting to get into Vets. And that's where I applied to do my microbiology. And I was accepted. So I did my BSc microbiology and biotechnology at Vets. During that time, then I applied for bursary with SAB, because as I was looking at obviously the study and reading more around where one could work, SAB kept on coming up on my list of potential employers, amongst other companies. But SAB at that time was rated one of the best employers in the country. So I did apply for a bursary with them. That was my first year. It was rejected. Second year, I was rejected. So they accepted me for my third year of study. So that's how I actually ended up obviously being secured a place within their company. When I finished my undergrad, I then decided I wanted to explore other universities, and then I applied at the University of Pretoria, UP, and that's where I did my honours, which after that, then I joined SAB. I trained as a brewer, so I did an 18-month brewing traineeship. During that time, I did a completed diploma in brewing through the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, which is based in the UK, and then worked for the company, and I also completed my Master Brewer qualification also through the Institute of Brewing and Distilling. And then I left SAB 2015. I started a microbrewery with a group of guys. There was five of us. The brewery was based in Kailami called Brew Hogs. And then I ran that for 2-3 years. And after, during that time, I actually started my own company, which is Brewster's Craft. So early days, I was doing training and consulting. And I then later in 2017, I received funding loan from the IDC to set up my own facility. So which we set up in 2018, and we are currently based in Roodepoort. So we are a 1,000-liter per batch facility plant that does contract manufacturing. Also have our own beer range and ciders. I do training. I've got an academy where I do our own in-house courses. I'm also accredited with the Food Bev Sita to take in learners through learnerships. I do interns. And obviously my focus is around microbiology, biotechnology students, chem eng students, so guys that are, the studies that are within the brewing space, just to also expose more young people to the study of brewing, so that obviously this study of beer making is a norm. So you, next time you interview someone, it's not a shock that one can actually study to become a brewer and actually become a brewmaster.
I think, you know, that point that you just touched on at the end is a very important one, where you said, you know, making beer, brewing, and being part of the industry a norm, so that we aren't surprised, you know, the next time we talk to someone from the industry. Could you give us maybe a sense of what that industry actually looks like? Because from a qualifying point of view and actually getting into it, it sounds like, you know, there's a big process that's involved, because you went to university, and after that there's certificates and qualifications from different industry bodies that are involved. But the actual makeup of the industry itself, you know, what is it looking like? Are there more IPOs that we haven't heard about, or is the industry keeping more IPOs from being there?
No, obviously within the beer industry in South Africa, we've got the two major players, SAB and Heineken, and then we've got the craft brewing industry. So that's quite a small, so those are micro manufacturers. So by law definition, those are breweries that make less than 100 million liters a year. Currently in South Africa, there's estimated just over 200 of these across the country. That's compared to, I think, US, they're sitting at like close to 10,000 of these small breweries across the country. So in terms of, and that has obviously started changing in the last few years. So when I joined the industry, this was back in 2008, I had never heard of a micro manufacturer, a micro brewer, but I only knew of the big brewing companies. And as a result, I think most people also were like that. And to become a brewer, in our understanding at that time, was that you had to have worked for a brewing company, and they take you through the brewing training, and they take you through their qualifications. But obviously now things have changed, because we have people who either have business ideas, or they've traveled the world and decided they want to start their own breweries. So you don't really have to have gone through my path in terms of having degrees and work for big brewing companies. So there are many people who have started their own breweries without going through that path. But obviously, as you know, education is key to anything. If you don't know what you're doing and obviously you're not gonna understand it as much as somebody who has studied it. So I think that's one of the advantages, obviously, of having a proper qualification backing the brewing, because brewing is actually a combination of the science and the art. So a lot of people that learn it. I mean, if you look at our African culture, omakhulu, whenever I went to school to brew umqombothi, but they do it and they know how to do it and they know what to do, what not to do, what are the good practices, hygiene, even though they have not studied that. So it's one of those where it's actually easily passed on. So, but the industry is obviously evolving. There's a lot more people getting into the industry. So IPA is not the only one. within the big brewing companies, there's many other black females who also are brew masters. And then it's just that within the micro brewing space, which are small businesses, unfortunately, it's still very, very, we don't have many females being represented. And it's one of the things that within Brewster's Craft, something I forgot to mention, that Brewster is actually a female, it's a term for female brewer. So for me, the company is about celebrating women in brewing, and so I actually mainly employ women so that I there is a pipeline of other people like me who will obviously carry on with the tradition of brewing and women in brewing in the continent.
It certainly does sound like you are on a mission to attack the industry in your own way. And actually on that side of, being a micro brewer, I think it would be interesting to get your thoughts just around what your thinking was in terms of structuring yourself the way that you have, because you came from that established world. You worked for one of the big ones, got most of your training from there, and then sort of went out on your own, first with your partners, and then now with what you're doing now. Why have you decided to, to do it that way? Because on this particular show, we've actually interviewed people, that are in different parts. For example, we've spoken to people that are craft beer makers but own a bar. We've also had people that do craft gin, etc. And it sounds like the opportunities are quite wide as long as you're aware. So why did you pick the parts that you did, and the actual focus on beer?
So for me, it's like I said earlier, when I joined the company SAB, I was obviously trained to make the products. So when things changed was when I was appointed as a craft brewer or a craft specialist for the company. It was back in 2011. And because at that time it was, the company wanted to not really launch commercially, but they were doing festivals. So we used to brew for an Oktoberfest. We used to do a whole lot of different craft festivals. So I was appointed as a brewer for the plant. It was a very small plant within the company, and I was given an open book to say brew whatever. So for example, I'll be told that there's a festival happening in Durban with brew whatever. What, tell us what you want to make and we'll just take it there. So I got to expose to the creativity within brewing, where now I could design my own recipes. I could decide what I wanted to make. So similarly to a chef who now can create their own dishes. I mean, then your creative brain kicks in, which maybe you didn't even know was there before. For me, I never thought it was something that I would end up in this path when I started my career in the beer industry. But at that point, I mean, it opened me up to a whole different world. I got to understand what was happening globally. I studied the global trends, seeing in this back 2011, 2012, where South Africa, the craft scene was starting to pick up, and following on the US trends and the European trends. And then I just, I kept hearing people like telling me, but why are you not making your own beer? Why are you? Because you know this is good, and looking how people, their businesses seem to be doing well from outside, I think the other thing that pushed me also was seeing like my father, who growing up was a teacher, left teaching earlier on and started his own business, and seeing him doing obviously well and being independent and having my aunt who was also having her own business. I think that's being surrounded by people who were already doing it, and saying that, you know what, it is actually possible for one to be successful in having their own business. For me, those are the key elements that actually kind of pushed me to ended up me leaving the company and starting my own brewery.
I like the fact that you've brought up the fact that in your own family, you know, the example of your father, for example, that business, getting into business is something that you sort of saw growing up. So with that in mind, what has been the attitude from, I guess, your family and friends about the fact that, you know, you are in this, you know, quote unquote unusual industry? I think we established at the beginning that there aren't a lot of people that are in this space. So what has been the response from your people, and what type of people do you keep around yourself? Because I can imagine that, you know, doing all the things that you're doing at the moment and running your business and the institute and doing all the consulting work, that you need to have a good crop of people around you to keep your to keep your world in order.
Yeah. So I remember when I told my parents that I wanted to study microbiology, the first thing my dad asked me was, is there money? And where are you going to work? And I think every parent wishes that their children, obviously, they take them to school, that they would have a safe job with a good income and you know. And I got that at SAP, I won't lie to you. I mean, it was a very, very steady, and my career was on a good path, you know. You know, and you can see you going up and up the ladder. When I then started to leave, I think because my dad was already in the business space, and he always, even today, he always talks to the fact that people always have to have not just also one stream of income. Even now, he always pushes me to invest in this and that whenever there's extra cash, you know. So I had that kind of support when I made the decision. It was very much received and welcomed and supported. And to this day, I have a good support structure. And obviously being a mother, I'm a mother of two, married. So my husband is also very, very supportive, and in terms of also, just giving me the time to obviously focus on the business also, and helping with the kids and having someone, a nanny for the kids. I think a lot of women, we sometimes feel that we have to be like superwomen and we have to live up to some of these expectations that now that you're a woman, people are going to feel you neglecting this and that, your kids. So for me, I think what has worked for me is surrounding myself with people that have been very supportive, like my mom. If it's school holidays, she's a psychology teacher. At school holidays, she would either come up here to help look after the kids, or she'd say, no, kids must come down to Eastern Cape. And then I know in that month I can push as much work as I can, because then the kids are well taken off by my mom. And then in terms of the business side, I'm also surrounded by, I think, like-minded people. I think I've been very fortunate that somehow I've managed to be able to select and pick the right people to surround me, and people who are always supportive, people are always some are honest. So I have people who would tell me, no, this is not it, and people who help you and guide you and actually help with some of the decisions that I bounce off certain people. And then within the brewery, I've got a very good a lady who's my head brewer. So I've known her from my Brewhawks days. I employed her then at the previous brewery as a trainee, so I trained her up also to become a brewer. And when I moved, she moved with, and now she's actually part of my shareholders, just to also make sure that the company itself, as much as I'm kind of help trying to grow the company, that there is obviously pipeline, there is structures in place, there is continuity within the company. Somebody who already is also in the brewing space who will also help continue with the company when I'm obviously focusing on other things. She can then be at the brewery and focus on making sure that our day-to-day things are getting done proper and the right way, the way that I would do them also myself. So I think all around, from a personal family to work to company structures, I think I have, it's also not perfect, obviously, but I think I'm kind of on the right track, I believe.
So we are with Apiwe Ntumsani Mawela, who is a brewmaster, a beer educator, and she is the founder of Brewster's Craft, and just giving us some insight into the industry. She is our brand new heavy. Very fascinating discussion just around what it takes to be in the industry, to own your own microbrewery, the type of training that you need, and giving us an idea of what the structure of the industry is looking like, and why she decided that she was going to, you know, strike out on her own, and the type of people that she does have around her. We're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side of this.
COVID Biz Watch. COVID Biz Watch on the Business Buzz.
Now, COVID Business Watch, we look at the effect and impact of COVID-19 on various businesses in and around South Africa. And in this week's edition, our producer Slindle MCB spoke to Tolisile Matlangu, who is the founder of The Scientist Chef. She is 24 and is from KwaMahlanga, a small town in Mpumalanga. She studied a Bachelor of Science in Chemistry at Wits University and is an aspiring medical researcher and a restaurateur. She is passionate about food and believes it's a way of telling your story through presentation, giving a tour around the world through different food cultures and a way of sharing. She actually started a food and bakery business 2 months ago and is operating all around Johannesburg, and she can actually be found on Instagram under the name The Scientist Chef. She was answering the following questions. Why did you decide to start your business in the middle of the pandemic and lockdown? What major advantages or disadvantages have you experienced in your business as a result of COVID-19? Do you believe your business is going to thrive once everything is back to normal, or would you have to change your business strategy? And what advice do you have for someone who'd like to start a business during the pandemic? Here's what she had to say.
So I decided to start my baking and cooking business during lockdown because I saw a great opportunity in terms of providing service that is convenient for me and the client, that is not going to put anyone at risk in terms of exposing ourselves to COVID-19. Because even though we were in our houses, not being able to go to work, not being able to move around, we still needed to celebrate those special occasions that we normally celebrate throughout the year. It could be our birthdays, it could be anniversaries, or any other occasions, or maybe just having friends over for a nice dinner or lunch. So it's easy for a person to just order a cake online, and then just the delivery is at your step door, or you just go pick it up at the client's operation place. That means that there is no exposure of you getting to queue on lines, exposing yourself to people, or having to go into restaurants and just having to expose yourself into more people as well, because we had to avoid contact as much as possible. We had to keep inside the doors. And also, it's very convenient for one to just invite a private chef to come cook for you and your friends or your family or your loved ones. That means that everybody is safe, everybody's in the house, still having a great time, with still having a great meal on the plate, but safe from outside, safe from COVID-19, and just safe from maybe spreading COVID-19 as well. And it also takes like safety measures, because you have to check your temperature before you go to someone else's house. You have to always wear protective gear, your gloves and your mask. So I saw a great chance in providing a service that will ensure your safety and also ensure that you're going to have a great time and just have a delicious meal or a delicious cake. The advantages of running a business through lockdown is that everyone is home. So when you use your social media to advertise, everybody gets to see. Nobody is busy, nobody's caught up with work. Everyone gets to see, and the exposure is great because people get to respond as well. And even ordering, it becomes easy. You don't have to involve a lot of admin into it. The disadvantages are that when you as an operator have to go out to get supplies for your business, that's a bit tricky because now you're exposing yourself to COVID-19, to becoming in contact with a lot of people, which puts you at a risk. But yeah, those are the disadvantages. And also it's that you can't really advertise to coffee shops about cakes or on the streets because everyone is at home, everyone is just on lockdown. And I believe that my business is going to strive after lockdown because I have established a bond and enough publicity to get it moving. Now people are going to be more comfortable in inviting a private chef over to just come and cook for them. They're going to be more comfortable in spending time with their friends they haven't seen in a while, or even colleagues. Events are going to happen. People are going to need food. People are going to need cakes. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to pop. It's going to grow. And for someone who wants to start a cooking and or baking business, firstly, you got to ensure that you have a plan in place. Don't just say you're going to freestyle all the way. Have a plan, a proper plan, operating plan in place to the specific, because that helps you to keep track of your spendings. That helps you to keep track of the kind of equipment that you would need to get. And also, finances must not be like really an issue. Yeah, you do need them, but the most important thing is, how is your product? Is it good? And how are you going to put yourself out there? So just make sure that you plan, like, thoroughly. You plan and don't be scared to ask people to advertise for you. Don't be scared to ask any advice from people who are out there already in the industry. So, yeah.
Much justice on the Business Buzz.
Welcome back to the Business Buzz. We are with our brand new heavy, Apiwe, who is the founder and a brewmaster at Brewster's Craft. She is, as I said, a brewmaster, and giving us some ideas of what the industry is looking like and what her journey has been like in the industry. Apiwe, I just want to maybe get a sense from you, because your company was only founded in 2015, but you're one of the leading providers of training and quality analysis and consulting services in the local, brewing industry. What do you think, just based on the conversation we had before the break, what do you think has allowed you to actually grow, this quickly or this fast? Actually, before I even say that, do you think you've grown quickly or fast in the last 5 years?
maybe not quickly and fast, but I think looking back, there has been a lot of growth in the company. And the interesting thing is, I'm sure everybody within business, we start off with an idea, and that idea just kind of evolves over time, and it gets a life of its own. And as you engage with more people within the industry, within the space that you're in, your thinking is shaped and changed for the better. And for me, that has been the growth that I've seen, not only in myself personally, but as a brewer. I think what has made it easier also is, to answer your other question, is I think coming from the background that I have, having studied microbiology up to honors level, having a master brewer, having worked for SAB, for about 8 years. So that helped a lot with the foundation for the company, because it means that when I give people my credentials or people talk to me or talk about me, they're already starting, they're not starting from ground zero. So I've noticed a lot of, obviously more respect and people, there's more buy-in, people get it better, like that. If somebody who just woke up, decided I'm going to do this without having gained that experience and having walked that path first.
The other one, just maybe taking a step back, from your particular, you know, business, because it does sound like you have made a lot of progress. But one of the things that has affected, I'm pretty sure it's affected your own business and the industry as a whole, is COVID-19, because alcohol industry really came to the fore. You know, people have always spoken about the alcohol industry. It's been one of these industries that, you know, has always been prolific, but especially during lockdown, it took on a different hue as people debated about lockdowns and bans and all of these things that were going on. Or did you find that your business was affected? Because talking to, you know, industry players in other parts of the sector, it sounded as if others were now looking to export markets if they couldn't sell domestically. All of those issues, how did you find that experience of running, you know, your business during this COVID-19 period?
No, like all the other the players in the industry, we were also heavily affected by the alcohol ban and the lockdown. I think I remember when the president announced initial phase 21 days back in March. At that time, he gave us a few days to kind of wrap things up. It was a bit of a shock, but I think the promise of 21 days, I was like, okay, fine, at least 21 days, let me plan, let me see what I can move around, how, with the money that we have, what can happen. And then obviously then we were, the ban was extended without knowing for how long. So that was very, very, very difficult, because I had to rent to pay, I had no loans to pay, I had employees that needed to be paid. You know, so it was a very, very, very stressful time. I started doing some sanitizers, just to try and keep lights on, you know. So I tried a few things, and then obviously we opened up, and then we closed again. So it has been a bit of a, not just a financial roller coaster, but also emotional. So it has been like definitely stressful times, because like I put my everything into this business. It's all like all of me, or like my kids. I was saying to somebody the other day that, you know what, my kids will be. If I lose this, then my kids will forever have to be paying. I could be paying back my thing. So it was very stressful, because for me it was like I need to survive. I need to survive this. I need to keep afloat. I need to swim across. And I tried. I launched a non-alcoholic product just to keep going. And just to give that lifeline. Say, you know what, there is hope. It is. You know, and luckily for me, I was also able to negotiate with my landlord. They were able to give me some, and the IGC was financing us, and try to squeeze here and there to make sure that the guys are taken care of. I talk to them, the guys, you know, we're on a ban, but I'll try by all means to cover the bare minimum so that everybody can at least have food. So we've survived. We are still surviving, because it's not over, because now we are living the aftermath of what happened for the past 5 months, because now obviously the landlord, it was not for free. They want their money. They might have given us their rental break, but now we have to pay, and now it's more. So it's now a different kind of stress. We survived the ban, we survived the lockdown. Now it's a matter of surviving cost. And make sure that we remain afloat for the remainder. I think if we can keep afloat for the remainder of this year into next year, then we should hopefully be okay there going forward.
I think, you know, on that end of surviving and then, you know, just trying to make sure that you do recover to those pre-COVID levels and be able to make all of those back payments, the new parts of the business that you were able to start, like the sanitizer that you mentioned just now, the non-alcoholic product, etc., do any of those things still remain or survive, you know, now that you're able to brew again, or were those sort of stopgap sort of activities?
No, the sanitizer part of the business, when we opened up, when we moved to level 3 in June, I then switched focus back to brewing. And then the non-alcoholic one, that will remain, because I mean, you know what, the stuff we've seen on the media around the alcohol issues in the country and a call for consumers to be more responsible. And I think that the non-alcoholic or low alcohol category is going to start growing. And we've seen that globally where people are more health conscious and more conscious about what they consume and how much of it. So I do think that one of the good things that came out of the lockdown is getting more people to appreciate non-alcoholic products and get even those that do drink alcohol to know that, you know, there is that category within the products that we produce and that is something that one can actually easily enjoy as much as they do enjoy the alcoholic products. So for me, that was one of the things that positives that came out of lockdown. And obviously from a training perspective, another positive that came out of the lockdown was more people wanting to learn, more people brewing at home, wanting to know more about brewing. So I also had an influx of people wanting to do training around brewing. So there has been, on the flip side, there has been some, I think, positives coming out of what we've just been doing.
I think at this point, because we are, you know, sort of rounding up and coming to the end of the discussion, we just want to switch a little bit and maybe talk a little around the future, you know, for APUA. And I want to start with the fact that you did mention earlier on that you are a mother, and you also mentioned the fact that you did grow up in a family where, you know, your father was in business. Now you are now in business. So as a mother and as a businesswoman, you know, what type of lessons, you know, do you think you're going to be impressing on your own children going forward, just around, you know, having either a business or a career? You know, where are your thoughts on that?
So for me, and one thing I actually forgot to also mention is that, like, my husband is actually a musician. So I'm a firm believer that everyone has to follow their dreams. Everyone has a path in life that is set out for them, and that we all have to follow that. And even with my kids, that's something that I want them to know, that obviously there's nothing wrong with being employed. There's nothing wrong with selling on business, but you also have to decide what you want to do, which path you want to follow. And I think just drawing learnings from how my parents reacted to my life choices, and I think that it's important for parents to allow kids to do what they want to do. I think my dad is not, I was very anti, I mean, growing up, he's still today, he's very anti-alcohol, but he understands that it's obviously a business choice that I've made, and he is supportive, you know. He still has some, obviously, reservations, but when it comes to him being a parent to me and being supportive to me and my choices in life, then he is actually fully supportive. So I think that is very, very important as parents, that we try, by all means, even if maybe we don't approve of some of the choices that our kids make, that we do all we can to support them.
That sounds like a very positive, outlook on that, you know, way of raising kids, just allowing people to explore, you know, their own things and giving them room to grow on their own. Your own business, where do you see it going?
One of my visions is to showcase what we do in Africa to the world. Because one of the reasons why I started the business was also I felt we were celebrating as Africans, we're not celebrating our own as much. If you have tourists coming in from Germany, most brewers would still make a Weiss beer for them, which is the same beer they have at home, which is their traditional way of brewing. And when people come to Africa, we never have a traditional element, and we don't let them celebrate us the way we go out to their places and celebrate them. So for me, I really want, my dream is to have not just by myself, but through our, because we also do contract manufacturing, so our contract group for a lot of township-based brand owners, black brand owners, that we need to create our own uniquely South African uniquely African way of brewing, style of beers, brands that we can then celebrate not only in South Africa, but we can take out to the global beer stage and say, yeah, this is what we do in South Africa. So my brewing is always focused around using African ingredients. Like I've got a strong Pilsner, I have a rooibos cider. I use many local ingredients because that, for me, I think is where the future for Africa ends. And that's the path that I actually want to take. That's my goal for the next 5 years, to continue pushing and celebrating the beer industry within South Africa, within Africa, and showing the world what we have to offer in South Africa and in Africa.
Perhaps, you know, because you've also brought up, you know, the quality, taste and flavors of beers, some of our listeners might be curious to know from a brewmaster what the best beer you've ever tasted is.
That's like asking your mother who's the favorite child. No, you don't answer such questions. But to be honest, I don't. So for me, I'm not actually I don't classify myself as a beer drinker, but more of a beer appreciator. So what I always try to do is from each brewing company, I always have a beer that I appreciate or I like, or which is my one of the favorite out of the rest. There's actually a saying that one of the famous chief brewers that I used to know at SAB used to say, there is no such thing as a bad beer, just that some beers are better than others. So I've lived by that there is no such thing as a bad beer, but it's that some beers are much better than others. In terms of enjoying, I like at the moment I'm enjoying like those Saison styles of beers. I'm enjoying my own beers, obviously. And I'm enjoying the Belgian style beers at the moment, like the fruity, flavorful, complex flavors. That's what I kind of like enjoying at the moment. But I don't have one single favorite that I would say out of everything in the world, that is my favorite.
No. We are happy to hear that. I think it's been a very fascinating and interesting conversation. I've really enjoyed this one. And then our last question is something we ask all of our brand new heavies, and it's, what do you want your legacy to be?
For me, I want to, if I was to die tomorrow, I would want to be remembered as that brewer who not only talked about transforming the industry, but actually did their part, did my part in transforming the industry. Not only in terms of introducing more black people as producers and manufacturers, because that's what we do through our contract manufacturing. A lot of the guys that I'm currently brewing for have dreams of opening their own breweries one day. For example, I've got a guy who's coming from Newcastle in Natal, and he's Newcastle Lager, and his long-term dream is to open a brewery there one day. And I've had people ask me, but why are you helping people who are going to be your competition? And my answer has always been that they are not my competition. We need to transform. When we say when government officials stand up on podiums and talk about transformation, about that we need to start local manufacturing, they can't do that. We need to, the ones who are already in the industries, we need to drive it and promote it and create an enabling environment that will allow all these guys to get to that point. And the other one is obviously around women in the beer industry. I don't want to be the first and the last person, the last black female brewer to own a brewery in South Africa. I want lots more to say, I could have started it, but then there was 1,000 more that came after. And that is why my focus when it comes to training and employing brewers at the moment, I'm very, very, very biased towards women and black women, because I can't just do the talking only. I need to do the do also, and that is what I would want to be remembered for.
I don't want to be the first and last, black female brewer. Those are the words of Apiwa Nkusani Mawela, who is a brewmaster, a beer educator, and she is the founder of Brewster Craft, and she was just giving us some insights into her business, her journey, her time in the industry, thoughts around family, upbringing, money, background. Very fascinating discussion. On the other side of this, we come to the end of the show. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
The Business Buzz. With Mudiwa Moksha Sibgabaza.
Thank you so much to Apiwe for being our brand new heavy for the month of September. Really enjoyed that discussion around the beer making industry, alcohol industry, what it takes to be in the industry, the qualifications, some of the politics around it, some of Apiwe's thoughts, her journey and her business mindset, having grown up in a business oriented family, and some of the lessons that she says is going to teach her children just around how to be in business, money, and your career. So a very valuable discussion, and I think, if you have to, maybe go back to our platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts, maybe go back to vids.journalism.co.za, listen back and just reflect on the conversation that we've just had. So with that, remember that you can keep in touch with us. That's Vow FM or Voice of Vids. You can also find our other Facebook page, that's Vits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and our hashtag is #BusinessBuzz. What did you think of our POS story? Did you identify with it? Are you someone who's been looking to get into this industry, and did you glean some knowledge about how to do so? Let us know what you guys think.
The Business Buzz Podcast.